Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On Monday, International Criminal Court's Chief Prosecutor Karim Khan publicly filed for 5 arrest warrants for senior Israeli and Hamas officials on charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity. According to the statement, 3 Hamas leaders, including Yahya Sinwar, bear responsibility for war crimes and crimes against humanity, the taking of captives, torture, rape, and other acts of sexual violence from hostages held in captivity. Khan said Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Minister of Defense Yoav Gallant bear responsibility for war crimes and crimes against humanity, including crimes, including starvation of civilians as a method of warfare and intentionally directing attacks against a civilian population. The response from Democrats and Republicans in the United States was swift. Here is President Biden responding to the ICC announcement at a Jewish American Heritage Month event on Monday.
Let me be clear. We reject the ICC's application for arrest warrants against Israeli leaders. Whatever these warrants may imply, there is no equivalence between Israel and Hamas. And it's clear, Israel wants to do all it can to ensure civilian protection. But let me be clear, contrary to allegations against Israel made by the International Court of Justice, what's happening is not genocide. We reject that. We can always stand with Israel and the threats against its security.
That was President Biden. Here is U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken speaking to Republican Senator Lindsey Graham during testimony in front of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee on Monday.
The shameful equivalence implied between Hamas and the leadership of Israel, I think that only complicates the prospects for getting such an agreement. We'll continue to forge ahead to do that, but that decision, as you said, on so many levels, is totally wrongheaded.
That was U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. And here is Republican Senator Lindsey Graham at the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Monday.
So we, hopefully, together will find a way to register our displeasure with the ICC, because if they'll do this to Israel, we're next. This group tried to come after our soldiers. Yeah, you can clap all you want to. They tried to come after our soldiers in Afghanistan, but reason prevailed. So at the end of the day here, what I hope to happen is that we level sanctions against the ICC for this outrage to not only help our friends in Israel, but protect ourselves over time. Ms. Secretary, your statement yesterday was excellent. The President's statement was excellent. Senator Schumer's statement on the floor was excellent about the outrage here. They have destroyed the notion of complementarity. They have misled people in the United States Senate about their intention, and they shall and will pay a price. Ms. Secretary, I appreciate what you've said. It is now time for us to act.
That was Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. When he said, "You can clap all you want to," he was speaking to anti-war activists in the room. Joining us to discuss what this all means is Reed Brody, a veteran war crimes prosecutor who told Democracy Now! The request for indictments is a watershed event in the history of international justice. Reed Brody has uncovered atrocities by U.S.-backed Contras in Nicaragua and exposed torture in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib during the Bush administration. His latest book is called To Catch a Dictator. His most recent article in The Nation, which came out before the ICC decision, is Who's Afraid of the International Criminal Court? Hi, Reed. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
So you say this is the first time a Western leader or pro-Western leader is subject to an indictment request. Can you talk about the significance of this?
Yeah, I mean, this is really an earthquake, a watershed moment in the history of international justice. As you quoted me, I mean, the International Criminal Court in over 20 years of existence has never indicted a Western or quasi-Western official, and really no international tribunal since the Nuremberg tribunal of the Nazi leaders in World War II has done so. I mean, up until now, the instruments of international justice that exist, you know, to protect victims and punish atrocity crimes have been almost exclusively used, to address crimes by defeated adversaries, as in, you know, the Nuremberg trials or the Tokyo trials of the Japanese after World War II, powerless outcasts, you know, from Africa, or opponents of the West, like Vladimir Putin or Slobodan Milosevic. And so, you know, that I think that is the context for some of the reaction we're seeing, that the ICC would dare to, put a warrant or to the prosecutor to seek a warrant against pro-American leaders of a Western-style democracy.
In fact, you say most people who work in the field of international humanitarian law did not think this would happen.
No, I really, you know, I have to say, I did not think this would happen. For 15 years, the case in Palestine and Israel has actually been sitting on the desk of the prosecutor well before October 7th. For the last 15 years, what is Palestine and Palestinian human rights groups, but also the state of Palestine, have been pleading for the International Criminal Court to intervene. And there were they've been given this slow walk by three successive ICC prosecutors who basically didn't want to deal with this issue for the exact reasons that's happening today. The first prosecutor kicked it to the second prosecutor. The second prosecutor had a 5-year investigation. And then just as she was leaving office, kicked it down, opened actually a formal investigation. And this prosecutor, who is a British barrister, who was elected as ICC prosecutor with the support of the United States, didn't seem either that he was this is not something I think he was hoping to do. And even after October 7th, the terrible attacks by Hamas that he described in the indictments yesterday as intentionally cruel, calculated cruelty, and then the disproportionate and indiscriminate response by Israel, you could see that he was starting to up the rhetoric. But I have met with him. I've been in meetings where this prosecutor basically was trying not. You could see that he didn't want to pull that trigger, and I think that the sustained Israeli onslaught, the growing international consensus around maybe not in the United States, but in most of the rest of the world around the criminal nature of what Israel is doing, as well as the decisions by the other court in The Hague, the International Court of Justice, which, unlike the ICC, which deals with criminality of individuals, the ICJ deals with cases, state-to-state cases. And, of course, that court has before it a case brought by South Africa against Israel, alleging that Israel is violating the Genocide Convention. And the ICJ, which was in a decision read out by the American president of that court, said basically that Israel has a case to answer. And I think all of these things made it untenable for the ICC prosecutor not to do what he did this week. We can talk about this. I mean, he in the same breath, he requested indictments of the three senior leaders of Hamas and the two leaders of Israel. And I heard in your intros all this talk about equivalence and putting them on the same level. But I think it would have been untenable for him to indict only one side and not the other. And he's not measuring one against the other. He is measuring both of them against the standards of international law. And he has found, and he's asking a pretrial chamber to find, that both sides have violated international humanitarian law, the war and by committing war crimes and crimes against humanity.
Reed, you have so much experience in this field. Your book, To Catch a Dictator, is about Hissène Habré, the former despot of Chad, who terrorized, tortured, and killed on a horrific scale over 8 years in power. You write about how you and a team of international investigators, legal experts, and victims worked across three continents to uncover evidence and witnesses. So you know what it takes to file these kinds of charges. You walk in this case, do you think that he used the Palestine dossier that's been on the desk of the international prosecutor for the last 15 years? I also wonder what your thoughts are about all of the video evidence that has been shared on social media. I mean, international journalists cannot get into Gaza. We're getting so much right. over all of the photos and the videos from Palestinians. You also have the AP in December reported video of Israeli soldiers rummaging through homes in Gaza. You know, they're playing with toys, trying to burn food. I mean, we're just seeing so many of these videos and photos. So can you talk about how that plays into this? This is really unprecedented, this video and these photos.
Well, I mean, it's unprecedented until Ukraine. I think, you know, we're living in a very different world today. The events I described in my book, To Catch a Dictator, where we're, you know, going, these were in African countries, where we did not have, I mean, as it happened in the case of Hissène Habré, I actually stumbled on the files of Hissène Habré's political police. So we had thousands of documents, in which, even with Habré's handwriting on them, documents which listed people who had been killed who died in detention and things like that. But now, I mean, since the last few years, you know, we've had much more of this kind of, you know, open source information, and particularly in Ukraine. Of course, in Ukraine, you had crimes being committed on the territory of a country that gave access, Ukraine, to international investigators. Here in Gaza, of course, that access has been denied. The prosecutor in his statement the other day, you know, he talked about having you know, video and interview, at least for the Hamas alleged crimes, that he had medical records and video and documentary evidence and interviews with survivors. Some of that he also had on the Gaza side. Interestingly, he has focused on crimes that are less. So he's in the indictment of Israeli officials, he's focused on starvation and the denial of humanitarian assistance and using food as a weapon and creating conditions difficult for human life. And so these are more larger policy issues that are less dense in terms of being actually on the ground. And because he also charged Israeli officials with intentionally directing attacks against the civilian population, which is basically the main transgression that constitutes a war crime is that you must distinguish between civilians and military. But interestingly, he didn't talk about specific attacks, because those are very fact-specific. In order to charge somebody, say, with an attack on a specific or an indiscriminate attack on a specific hospital or school, you need to know exactly what were the Hamas fighters, what did the people who target who carried out these strikes or who ordered these strikes understand. He kind of more focused on policy decisions that can be directly tied to the leadership in both cases of Hamas and Israel, rather than very fact-specific, incident-specific things.
Today, we're speaking about the International Criminal Court filing for 5 arrest warrants for top Israeli and Hamas officials on charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Reed Brody, a veteran war crimes prosecutor, will be with us for 10 more minutes. So if you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Reed, what does this announcement mean in practical terms? You told Democracy Now! That 124 countries have ratified the ICC treaty, meaning that if one of the suspects were to go to these countries, the ICC, those countries, would be required to arrest them and hand them over to The Hague.
That's correct. So, I mean, obviously, even if the arrest warrants, because now these arrest warrants go to a 3-judge panel that needs to review the requests. And if they are issued, then Benjamin Netanyahu and Sinwar and the leader, these 5 people, become essentially fugitives, wanted men like Vladimir Putin. The problem is that the International Criminal Court does not have a police force. It does not have a way of capturing suspects other than through state cooperation. And that's why, frankly, the ICC has a very poor record. It has never actually captured, prosecuted, and convicted a state official anywhere in the world. But of course, this makes their world much, much smaller. Vladimir Putin did not go to a summit. After Vladimir Putin was subject of an arrest warrant by the court last year for crimes allegedly committed in Ukraine, he curtailed his travel. He still goes to places like China and other countries that have not ratified the ICC treaty, but he did not go to a summit of the BRICS countries in South Africa, which is a state party to the ICC. He's unlikely to go to the next BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. He's unlikely to go to the next BRICS summit in Brazil, which is also a state party. And in the case, of course, of Netanyahu and Gallant, the 124 ICC states comprise most of the Western world, aside from the United States. It includes all of our European friends. It includes Latin America. It includes Canada. So this will substantially make their world much, much smaller.
What precedent does this set, and what does it mean for the future? The UN says that Israel has launched 4 military assaults on Gaza before October 7th. So I can't even, I mean, what does it mean to even rebuild Gaza at this point, and how is that going to play out? We'll have to do shows about that. But what does this mean for the future of the Israeli occupation and a decision to launch a future assault?
Well, of course, the practical immediate effect of this decision may be limited by the fact that, up until now, I think Israeli leaders have counted on impunity for their crimes. I mean, most leaders, frankly, count on getting away with their crimes. The prosecutor's announcement today is unlikely to impress, or this week is unlikely to impress Benjamin Netanyahu, but other Israeli, everybody down the line, could be eventually brought up on war crimes charges. And I think, it may cause, people to consider their actions. The hope, of course, is that, ultimately there will be, this is not these criminal warrants are not the political solution. The political solution, obviously, ultimately is a ceasefire and a rebuilding, as you say, of Gaza.
I also wonder, what your thoughts are about the claims we're hearing from Israeli leaders about how this is the new anti-Semitism. Again, I just want to credit Democracy Now! Because that's where we found you. So thanks to that team. When Amy Goodman was interviewing you, she pointed out that your father, Dr. Evan Brody, was a Hungarian Jew who escaped from a German labor camp. And then I was fascinated to read that the panel convened to consider arrest warrants in the case of Israel and Hamas included Theodore Marone, a Holocaust survivor. And I wondered just who is Theodore Marone? And when he was 9 years old, when the Nazis invaded Poland, he became a refugee out of school and out of childhood. So he was one of the panelists who considered arrest warrants in this case. So what are your thoughts we're hearing about this anti-Semitism?
Yeah, I mean, look, I live most of the time in I live in actually in Europe, and as you mentioned, my father was a survivor of labor camps. I had family that died in the Holocaust. I sent my son to a Jewish school. I'm very sensitive to anti-Semitism, and I'm sensitive to the fact that anti-Semitism is on the rise today in Europe, in the United States, but I find it's as a way of shutting down all discussion. This has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. This has to do with applying the law. This has to do with the killing civilians. This has to do with crimes against humanity. And I find it offensive on the part of Jewish and non-Jewish leaders to invoke what happened to our people in order to defend what Israel is doing, but also in order to shut down any legitimate criticism of the tactics used by Israel. And I should add that I know that none of this has made Israel more safe. None of this have made, you know, we always say, how does this affect the Jews? I don't think this is good for the Jews. This is not good for my people around the world, what Israel is doing today. And I find it encouraging at the same time that people like Ted Marone, who is not a radical. I mean, Ted Marone was leading legal advisor in Israel. He was the U.S. candidate for these courts. He headed the Yugoslav tribunal. He headed the appeals panel of the Rwanda tribunal. This is a very conservative, hidebound, traditional jurist who comes out of a Jewish humanitarian tradition. And I find it encouraging when it is Jews who stand up and talk about the law and humanity.
Reed Brody is a veteran war crimes prosecutor. His latest book is called To Catch a Dictator. He exposed torture in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib during the Bush administration. Before this ICC decision came out, he wrote a piece for The Nation called Who's Afraid of the International Criminal Court? We have a caller who wanted to know about whether there's a statute of limitations on the arrest warrants.
You know, that's a wonderful question. And the answer is no. And so, you know, we've seen often in international justice, whether it's the Khmer Rouge who were prosecuted 30 years later, or the case or hit Augusto Pinochet, who was of Chile, who was arrested in London 25 years after the crimes, hit the case that I wrote about, Hissène Habré, who was the dictator of Chad in the 1980s, and who we finally convicted in 2015. These crimes will hang over the heads of the Hamas leaders and of the Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant for the rest, as long as these cases are pending, unless they can get the cases thrown out. If the arrest warrants are issued, they will be there forever.
And can you tell us more about where this goes from here? Because I think some people were confused about this. What does it mean to publicly file for 5 arrest warrants?
Well, it's interesting. Normally, you don't. I mean, in the case of Vladimir Putin, when the arrest warrants were issued, I think a year and a half ago, The world found out about it only when the arrest warrants were approved by the three-judge panel. It is not usual for a prosecutor to announce that he has requested arrest warrants. And he says that he did that, and this goes back to one of your questions before. He said he did that because of the ongoing nature of many of the crimes, and because he did want his warrants to have a dissuasive effect. But it will now be weeks or more. There's a three-judge panel, judges from Romania, Mexico, and Benin, who will decide whether to issue these warrants, whether to amend them, whether to send them back. Normally, I would assume, I mean, the prosecutor, it's interesting. I mean, in addition to going public with his request, he also convened this panel, as you mentioned, with Judge Ted Meron and many others. He had as head of his inquiry, I don't know, those of you who saw his announcement on video, he was flanked by an American jurist, Brenda Hollis, and by the former chief British prosecutor, Andrew Cayley. So he really surrounded himself with, he knew that this reaction was going to come down. I mean, this was, you know, as we've discussed in the beginning, this was really a red line. For the United States. The United States has been fighting for the last 25 years since the court was created to make sure that no American and no Israeli would ever be questioned by the ICC. The U.S. back in 1998, when we were drafting the statutes of the ICC in Rome, fought to limit the court's jurisdiction to only those states that had ratified the treaty. And the overwhelming majority of countries said, no, the court will have jurisdiction either over nationals of states that have ratified the treaty or when crimes have been committed on the territory of a state that has ratified the treaty or granted the court jurisdiction, because those states can do that. They have the territorial jurisdiction. They can prosecute. They can give that. They can delegate that to the ICC. And that is how we saw, for instance, 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, the warrants against Vladimir Putin. Russia has also not ratified the ICC treaty. But the crimes were committed, allegedly, on the territory of Ukraine, which has granted competence to the ICC. And interestingly, despite all, you heard in the beginning from Lindsey Graham and all of these other people who had been against the idea of the court going after a so-called non-state party, they all applauded then when the ICC indicted the Russian president, even though Russia hasn't ratified the treaty. So we see this hypocritical whiplash. We don't like the court, but then when it goes after Vladimir Putin, we love the court. And then when it goes, you know, the law has to be the law for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, that's what, I mean, this British prosecutor with a very Western team has said, the law applies to everybody.
Final question, Reid. What does the ICC decision mean for people who have lost loved ones, for justice for those who died? I wonder what your thoughts are about that word justice in this context. I mean, again, the October 7th Hamas attacks resulted in the deaths of 1,200 people, 253 hostages. Israel says 124 remain in captivity. You mentioned the Palestine dossier. It's been on the desk of the international prosecutors for 15 years, 35,000 deaths in Gaza, over 14,500 children. The American Friends Service Committee says 600,000 children are on the edge of death because they don't have access to food. So what does this mean for people who have lost loved ones and are seeking justice for those who've died?
Well, I think you'd have to. I think it's hard to speak in other people's names. I mean, in the cases I've been working on, where I know many of the victims or most of the victims, in the cases of Gambia and Chile and Chad, and working with victims, when victims see a court that listens to them, that is already a kind of justice. I mean, we say that the quest for justice is justice, and that to know that people are hearing your suffering, that they've registered you, that they have your name, that they have your child or your father, or your daughter's name in their dossier. These things mean, I mean, it's not going to bring anybody back. And as we talked about, it's not going to solve the situation. I don't know. This is still I think for people in Gaza who are, living through what they're living through, for the Israeli hostages. I don't know that this, I mean, well, I hope that they watched, and I'm sure that many of them did. It's very interesting to me as an international lawyer that together with the court in The Hague, the other court in The Hague, the International Court of Justice, that for the first time in my lifetime, the world is actually focused on law and on humanitarian law, and that the law is really standing up to powerful actors. And I hope that is, out of all of this tragedy, a positive development.
Well, Reed, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
Reed Brody is a veteran war crimes prosecutor who exposed torture in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib during the Bush administration. His latest book is To Catch a Dictator. He wrote a piece about the ICC in The Nation. His father, Dr. Evan Brody, was a Hungarian Jew who escaped from a German labor camp. And we'll definitely have Reed back to talk more about international law and what it means when countries like the United States does not abide by international law. And we'll talk about his book. Coming up after a break, the UC Berkeley Divest Coalition is seeking transparency and divestment from firms that profit from Israel's occupation and military assault on Gaza. We'll be back after this.